All right, Rod, you take that seat. Stu, you can be next. Evan, and then Conrad. You got that hot seat right there, Rod. That's the hot seat. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Warbirds in Review. Appreciate y'all being here. We have a distinguished cast here of pilots and airplanes. As Connie said, we are herding cats this morning, and I have to say it's really pretty cool. Quick introductions. The first guy to my left here, Rod Lewis. Some of you may know of him, may have been to his museum down in Texas. Another, I'll categorize you as an extreme warbird aviator, and we'll be talking to him about a couple of these airplanes. But basically, let's see, four of them are owned by Rod, and one of them is owned by the Fagans, who we have already recognized out here. There's Ron and Diane right there, and their son Evan, who is, by the way, another extreme warbird aviator, I'll say that. But alongside Rod, we've got Stu Dawson, another extreme warbird aviator, experience in all these airplanes, raced in some of, not these airplanes, but similar airplanes, as in Bearcats. And so we'll be talking to him a little bit about some of those airplanes. Evan, I already talked to you about, and then Conrad Huffstutler down there, and he's kind of an expert of the first airplane that we got here, and that's the Wildcat. So those are the folks that we've got up here, and like I said, I'm honored to be here amongst these guys, and I was just thinking about it, how much time we might have in front of us in terms of warbird time. And I'll just ask, Rod, how much warbird time you think you got? All airplanes.
All airplanes? All warbird airplanes?
All warbird airplanes.
Working on about 13,000 total time, but warbirds probably 1,000.
Thousand hours of warbird time. Stu, I don't even want to go there, okay? Stu, how much warbird time you got?
4,000 or 5,000.
Okay, so we're up to it. We'll say 6,000 hours, okay? Evan, how about?
I have about 1,000.
Okay, so 7,000, and Conrad?
And I'll come in at the bottom at 500.
Okay, 75. So what you're looking at here is about 7,500 hours of warbird time in a variety of warbirds. So, gentlemen, I say thank you for being here, and thanks. Yeah, absolutely. Spectacular. With that, I'm going to ask Rod a little bit about, hey, these are his airplanes, okay? And talk a little bit about his operation that he's got down there. And he, by the way, let's see. Rod flew in the Tiger Cat. Stu flew a Tiger Cat in here. Evan, what did you fly the Hellcat?
Yep.
He flew the Hellcat in here, and I think the Wildcat was here, wasn't it? Okay, so he does fly them, and there's a story there too. But yeah, these guys flew these airplanes in, and before we go any further, too, they will be flying acro shows with a Bearcat and with a Tiger Cat while we're here. And we're not sure. Hey, check your schedule. We're not exactly sure when you'll see that. But with that, Rod, I'm just going to sit down and I'm going to say, okay, tell us a little bit about your operation and how you got involved. And this guy, by the way, I think he's up to 36 airplanes. Is that right? About 36 airplanes, and this guy is a patriot. Let there be no question that he's maintaining, he's flying, he's keeping the airplanes for us, and I truly appreciate that. But go ahead, Rod, I'll turn it over to you for a minute.
Well, thank you. I started out, I guess, in 95. First, I wanted to recognize one other pilot that's out in the crowd. Gordon, where are you at?
Gordon,
there he is.
Way in the back?
He's our resident Bearcat pilot. I don't know why you're not up here, but...
Okay.
Anyway, we'll get you involved. So Gordon flew the Bearcat in, and he flies this Bearcat most of the time. I've actually got three Bearcats plus a race Bearcat.
Okay.
And Stu can talk to you a little bit about that. But I started out in, back to your original question, started out in about 1994. I was really interested in the warbirds from 86 on. Didn't have enough money to buy one, so about 94 bought my first one. It was a T-28. 95, we brought it to Oshkosh. It won best T-28 in Oshkosh in that year, and then about a Whirlway. So those were, I had a tail dragger and tricycle gear, and I just flew those, mainly because my dad was in the Air Force 22 years, and he flew the T-28A. I happened to buy a B model with a bigger engine. So that's kind of how I got my start, and I just loved it from then on. The next aircraft I bought wasn't until about 2005, and it was an NA-50. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was at Chuck Yeager's Grass Valley Airport. Went there, he helped me look at it, we checked it out, and I bought that airplane. And then I bought a Mustang, and it kind of just went on from there. Started in about 2005.
Okay. So. And now 36 airplanes later. And growing or stabilized at this point?
Growing. Okay. Yeah, I've actually got a Hellcat. It's been 7 years in the making, and I hope it's here next year.
Okay.
It was supposed to be here this year. So thank you, Evan, for bringing yours.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. Okay, well, what we're going to try to do in this program today is we'll start with the beginning of the Cat series here. So we'll start with the Wildcat, and then we'll work our way up through the Hellcat, through the Bearcat, and the Tigercat. And so with that, I'll say, okay, this Wildcat that's here is one of yours, correct? And from an acquisition standpoint, where did it come from?
Oh, boy, you've got the history on that one. But it came from the bottom of Lake Michigan.
Okay. Conrad, so you got any details on that one?
So the Wildcat we see here is a pretty special Wildcat in that it's the only true Grumman-built Wildcat. There's probably about 13 Wildcats still out there and airworthy, 12 of which were all built by the General Motors Company. So it is a rarity, and it's here today because it was lost in Lake Michigan in 1943 and spent 50 years underwater before it was brought back up and restored to flying condition. It is also an F-4F-3, so all of the General Motors aircraft were a different engine and a different arrangement. This aircraft, the wings do not fold because they hadn't invented it yet. The F-4F-4, the next variant, was the first one to get the folding wings. But this is the same airplane that would have fought for the United States in the early war period. This is our first fighter that we had going into World War II. You'll recognize the airplane as well from many of the early battles, Wake Island, Guadalcanal. This is the particular type that they had to fight those battles. As the years went on, they made improvements to the airplane, and they ended up going into full production on the Hellcat, so they passed off the manufacturing over to General Motors Company, and they started building FM1s and then the more powerful FM2, which is what we normally see. But a very neat airplane. We brought it up last year. We did some talks about it, and we left it here at the EAA Museum for them to showcase throughout the year and talk more about it. And we came up here a couple weeks ago, did all the inspections, test flew it, got it back into the only airworthy F-4F-3. So we'll be flying it in the show, and we'll be bringing it back to San Antonio to join the rest of the collection.
Outstanding. How about, what was the limitation? Why, okay, we had this airplane, and it fought, and it did okay, but we wanted something better. What were the limitations? Why wasn't it good enough to go fight against the Zeros, et cetera?
Well, I'll back up a little bit with Grumman. Grumman started in December of 1929, and what they started doing was building floats with this very odd retractable landing gear. And they would use those floats on a different manufacturer of airplane, but it converted the aircraft to be amphibious. So that's where they got their start, and they started doing a lot of odd jobs, building truck bodies and all sorts of things to get by. But they decided they would build their first aircraft and try to win a military contract. And that first aircraft started out as a biplane. The FF1 mm-hmm. was the first one. And they made different iterations of the airplane, the F2F, the F3F, all biplanes. And the F4F originally was going to be a biplane, but the Navy said, you know, we're done with those. We want monoplanes. That's the way of the future. So the F4F was converted over to be a monoplane. But the F4F was just the most advanced thing we had at the time. And when we first got into battle with Japan, I think we had a rude awakening in that they had a very well-performing airplane. Somehow they had come up with the Zero, and the Zero could outperform the Wildcat. But the one thing that we had was a lot of good guys that came up with tactics to combat the Zero, as well as a very strong airplane. Grumman has always been referred to as the Grumman Iron Works because they built their airplanes just extremely tough. They could come home with a lot of battle damage. They had a lot of things that the Japanese didn't want to put in place, nor could they put in place for some reasons. But Grumman would put self-sealing fuel tanks, which helped protect the pilot. They put more armor plating, helped protect the pilot and get them home. Whereas the Japanese Zero was a lot more lightly built and didn't have some of these amenities. So the Wildcat was the best that we had, but it still wasn't a great comparison to the Zero that we knew nothing about going into the war, but quickly found out it was a formidable fighter.
So the Zero basically could outturn it, could outclimb it, could probably outdive it, and we sat there and we said, hey, we needed something better.
Yeah, they had a task at hand trying to take on a Zero. A Zero was much more maneuverable, higher power-to-weight ratio, but they found that they could, you know, there's a chink in the armor. They could shoot these things, and they would light up and go down. Mm-hmm. So they had to devise tactics to be able to get a shot on them.
Yep, understand. All right, from there now, and we'll stop a little bit with the Wildcat. We're still doing okay on time. Okay, so we had to do something better. And so that something better was obviously the Hellcat. We bumped it up and we said, okay, you know, hey, is this now a formidable counterpart to the Zero? And I think that's what they came up with. So, Evan, I'll turn over to you for a minute just to talk a little bit about the Hellcat.
Sure. Well, the Hellcat was designed, obviously, by Grumman. And what they did is they brought a bunch of Wildcat pilots in to help them figure out how to make the Wildcat better. They wanted to make an improved Wildcat, and they came up with the Hellcat. You know, flying the Wildcat, they're great airplanes, but they do have a little bit of limitation factor. They're wheelbase from center wheel to center wheel is 68 inches, so it's very narrow. And of course, being an aircraft carrier airplane, they'd point into the wind and you don't have much of a crosswind. But the Hellcat, they wanted a more stable airplane. The Hellcat, obviously you can see the gear is very wide. They changed the engine. It's an R2800-10, which is 2,000 horse. It's 18 cylinder. They first flew the Hellcat in June of 1942. And it had its first kill in September of 43. And the Hellcat, you know, it's not the fastest fighter, but they designed it for a 200-hour farm boy to fly in combat. Mm-hmm. And that's what they did. It's the easiest flying fighter that I've ever flown. You know, and it's very rugged. I know there's a story of a Hellcat landed on a carrier with over 200 bullet holes. Wow. Very rugged. They could be shot up, but so the Navy awarded Grumman the contract to get the Hellcat going, and they produced an amazing amount. 12,275 were built, and kind of a crazy fact, the factory heard a rumor that they were going to start laying people off, so they really started producing. And the war production record for an airplane is on the Hellcat, and they produced one an hour at peak.
Wow.
So they were pumping those things out like crazy, and the Navy actually told them to slow down. Well, that's a true story. But so out of those 12,275, there's about 26 airframes left, and that's from a pile of parts on a pallet to this airplane here, and there's seven that are deemed flyable. And of those seven, I would say, you know, one to three on a given day are actually flying or in an annual. But the Hellcat could take a lot of punishment. It had three 50 caliber machine guns. Each had 400 rounds, each machine gun. It could hold eight rockets or up to four bombs, depending on the armament mission, I guess. But, you know, the top speed is not flashy like the Corsair, but their carrier qualifications were really good where the Corsair was struggling. So it became the Navy's go-to fighter for a long time. And it just really took hold of being the mainstay fighter. The Grumman, or the Hellcat, shot down 5,163 airplanes, which equaled 56% of all naval kills in World War II. And it lost 270 Hellcats to combat. So at a 19-to-1 kill ratio, which was the best of World War II. And David McCampbell, it was brought up in that video, he had 34 kills, which I believe was the highest scoring Hellcat ace. And the Hellcat was the first airplane to fly with the Blue Angels, actually formed the Blue Angels with the Hellcat, and then later went right to the Bearcat. But it's a great flying airplane. You know, last year we had Don McPherson here, who's a Hellcat ace, and he's still with us. He's 100 years old. And got to know Don, and he talked about how rugged it was in combat and how much punishment it could take. And, you know, when you fly this airplane, it's just the gentlest airplane. It really has no bad habits as long as you're doing what you're supposed to, and it's just a great platform.
How about the acquisition of this particular airplane? Where'd this one come from?
This airplane was Yanks out in Chino, California. It was there, I think, since 1976. And I kind of pestered the owner for about 3 years trying to get him to sell it. And he finally did. And then we brought it over to Planes of Fame. And Steve Hinton Jr. took this project on. He was here last year at Warbirds Interview with us. And we flew it. You know, about a year and a half ago for the first time. And it was a very good restoration process. The Hintons are first class. You can't beat them. And they built a great airplane, so.
Yeah, I'll say now, afterwards, you'll have a chance to walk around these airplanes, take a look at them, because the rebuild process has been just absolutely tremendous on all of these things here. And the Hellcat in particular, we did that last year. And yeah, it was spectacular. How about top speed? Compare top speed on the Wildcat versus top speed on a Hellcat.
You know, that's what do you consider top speed on the Wildcat cruise?
Well, I don't know that there's a number. It actually, one of the benefits of the Wildcat is it will hit terminal velocity. You can be full throttle straight down, and it will stop going faster. So the neat thing about the Wildcat is it really doesn't have any gauge markings on the airspeed indicator. The flaps are vacuum, so if you're going too fast, they just won't come down. And I guess there would be a limitation on the gear, but you know, it's pretty rugged itself. So I don't know that there is a speed.
Huh, okay.
And you know, the Hellcat, I'm thinking about 210 knots cross country is, you know, but they had a very high red line, 420 knots.
Okay.
I can't even imagine getting to that, you know, but Hellcat's built like a tank, and it'll just keep going. But it's not the fastest fighter flying over here with my dad in the P-40. He had to give me a couple inches so I could stay caught up with him. But we were doing pretty good coming over, about 266 knots with the tailwind. So
yeah, that's not
can't
bad.
Complain.
That's not bad. All right, let's move on to, and arguably now we're getting into the Bearcat, Tigercat category. And I'll start now, just because I think it's a cooler airplane. Well, no, I'll stay with the Bearcat. So we'll, the expert here, and I guess over here too, is Stu up here. And he's flown these things for a long time. He's raced these things for a long time. And Rod, you said you own three normal kind of Bearcats, and then that one called Rare Bear.
Right, a dash one, and two dash twos, and then a modified Bearcat. So.
All right. And okay, Stu, I'm going to put you on the spot now. What do you think about the Bearcat? How about starting out with the strange one, with Rare Bear? What do you think about racing that thing?
That's not a Bearcat.
Okay.
It doesn't fly like a Bearcat.
Okay.
It's highly modified. It's got so much chopped off the wing. The wing folds, when you fold them, they're about that big.
Okay.
The engine's been changed. We're running a 3350 versus a 2800. Okay. And a highly modified 3350.
And how much horsepower are you getting out of that thing?
Well, it's kind of debatable. You know, they say this, they say that, but we're turning the airplane, you know, 2800 is all you turn at 3350. We turn at 3200. And we're pushing about 80 inches of manifold pressure out of it.
Wow.
So it's, yeah, it's doing
it's a little good. Rocket ship.
It's a rocket ship.
Uh-huh.
We have to blow the struts all the way up to be able to land it and not get the prop.
Yeah.
So your approach to the field is your nose way up in the air, and you just hope you see runway as you come across the runway, and then
no
land
flaps.
It.
No flaps.
No flaps. No,
no flaps.
No.
No flaps. No
flaps are weight. You throw those away.
And so, I got to ask, how successful were you in Rare Bear?
I did. We raced it, what, Rod, 4 years?
Yeah,
3 years?
Yeah. I raced from 2007 to when we quit.
Yeah.
So.
And I got to second.
Okay.
Yeah. The next deal was going to be nitrous oxide. And that puts it over the top. Because it ran, when it was somebody else's airplane, it ran nitrous oxide, and it was a hoss. Huh. Huh. But you got to have, your nitrous guy has to be really good, mm-hmm. or it's just going to go bang.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
that's the race side of it. How about the normal airplane? Again, they stepped up. They sat there and they said, okay, we've got the performance from the Wildcat. That wasn't good enough. We got the performance from the Hellcat. We want to bump it up from there. And, hey, Bearcat. And they jumped that thing up there. And primarily it was a weight thing, wasn't it? Didn't they really?
Weight and horsepower.
Okay, so talk about that. So,
the Bearcat is the most maneuverable one out here.
Maneuverable as in
maneuverable
turning.
And flight, and I mean it rolls good, it climbs good, it does everything really well. It's not a hard airplane to fly. It's you know, pretty docile if you just do it right.
Mm-hmm.
It's light as it can be. A Bearcat is just one of the nicest ones to fly.
Didn't it have a climb to time record for a while there?
I'm not sure about that, Gordon.
Okay. It did. Okay, that's what I thought. I thought
I think
like
it was
a, you know,
3 minutes.
3 minutes to
10,000. Sea level to 10,000.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That was the criteria that it was built under.
And that's what they were looking for. They wanted climb performance out of that thing.
Yeah.
They lightened it up. Still had big motor.
Yeah, but they're doing that, pushing 50 inches and ADI and everything, and it would go.
Okay.
It would go.
Okay.
But it's a very well balanced airplane.
Mm-hmm. And it came, unfortunately, a little bit after the war. It really didn't see much.
It didn't see a whole lot.
Which is unfortunate. But it was very popular on the air show circuit, too, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, yeah.
Blue Angels.
And did well. Yeah.
Yeah. So absolutely.
So that's the next step. And now we jump into this Tiger Cat thing. And I got some personal experience with a friend of mine who flew the Tiger Cat, and that was a couple of years ago. I think it was 2 years ago when Connie Boland flew in with Stu, as I remember. And she lit up her left or right wheel?
Left wheel.
Yeah, lit up. They had a little bit of a problem. And when a magnesium wheel hits concrete, oh, there's lots of sparks. I'm here to tell you, there's lots of sparks. The good news is, no harm done. As I remember, they jacked that thing up, took the wheel off, put another one on there, and you flew another, you know, three shows or whatever it was with it. But that was that Tiger Cat. There are two other Tiger Cats here, and I don't know who wants to start talking about the Tiger Cat. Rod?
Yeah, I'll say a few words about it. Well, it's kind of my go-to airplanes. That and the P-38
okay.
are kind of the airplanes I really love to fly. I think two engines, you know, at some point in your life, you want a second engine.
I understand.
So the thrust, the takeoff power is incredible. It's a short field if you want it.
Both 2800s, right? There are 2800s
yeah,
on each wing.
CBs and the ones that we have. And just they're very maneuverable. They're a little heavier, of course, than the Bearcat.
Mm-hmm.
They're tough to fly in formation because you've got those two engines. But they're, you know, it's just a very safe airplane. It's docile, stalls, you know, very gentle, just like any Grumman. So it's just an incredible airplane to fly.
Speed-wise, it's probably... Straight off the Insepoli line, it's probably the fastest of any of these. Could I say that?
Yeah, definitely. I, when I was racing, I raced the silver one out there. I set the track record at Reno for 3.99, and that was 50 feet off the ground in the pylons. So that was you know, we're banking the whole time.
Wow.
So it'll go.
And what's the difference between these two airplanes here now?
Not much.
Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty much the same.
Both Dash 3s.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And how about acquisition? Where did they come from?
This is the first one that I bought, and it came from the museum, and what was the name of the museum?
I'll think of it here in a minute.
Yeah, it's got a...
The other one was Lone Stars.
Yeah, Lone Stars. I actually bought it from Mike Brown. Mm-hmm. He was racing this Tiger Cat, the other one, and it was called Big Boss Man. And then I changed the paint job, and then I raced it after that.
The other one was from Kalamazoo.
Kalamazoo, yeah, that's okay. Right. Yeah, this blue one.
Okay. And maintenance-wise, are they pretty easy to maintain, or are you constantly trying to work on these things?
We've got some guys that really know what they're doing. Okay. So I think the maintenance is just kind of a regular maintenance schedule.
Parts?
Parts. We haven't had too difficult of a time. Okay. We can find parts for them.
Okay, and I got to ask the same thing. How about parts on the Hellcat? Difficult, easy, hard, expensive?
Depends on what you're looking for, but if anybody needs Warbird parts, we sell Warbird parts, so shoot me an email.
Okay, and how about on Wildcat?
The Wildcat's fairly easy to work on because it's a simple airplane. But, yeah, parts are getting harder to come by. You end up just pulling the original microfiche film from the Smithsonian and building what you need.
Okay, thanks. Just to let you all know, this morning was kind of a special morning. We gathered out here, I think the first brief was 5:30 or something like that, and the short story is that Breitling was involved. They wanted to get involved with Warbirds, and they did. We had them here with a breakfast. They had a B-25, they had these two Tiger Cats and four P-51 Mustangs, and they all pre-briefed, and they wanted to go fly and take some pictures. And so that's what they did. It lasted, about an hour or so?
A little over an hour, yeah.
And as I remember, I think B-25 took off first, circled left, and I think the whole crowd joined up over top of the field. We watched a nice formation takeoff, by the way. I watched the two Tiger Cats took off in formation, and that was kind of cool. And then they joined up on the B-25, and then the four Mustangs joined up. And if it works, if you all take a look at the big screen, and I'm going to take a look here, I think we can coordinate so that we can show some of the stuff that went on here this morning. Scott, back in Sleeping Dog, promised me that he'd be able to do some of this stuff. And, yeah, this is the flight this morning. You can see what – and you guys, yeah, you can stand up and take a look, too. But this is what went on this morning. And we had – there you go. That's the flight that went on this morning. Some good formation flying, a lot of aluminum in the sky out there. Ray Fowler, I don't know if he's in the audience or not. He was flight lead. He was flying the first B-51. We had Paul Draper is number two, Wes Stowers number three, and Lumpy. Oh no, I think it was Lumpy who was number three, and Wes was number four. And so those were our Mustang pilots out there, and. I'll open up. Stu, what do you think? Was it a good flight, bad flight? Did you have fun?
Yeah, it was good. It was good. I think they got what they wanted. It was a little cloudy, and we had to kind of hunt a little bit to make it all work. But the clouds, you know, they add something to it.
Yeah.
And once we all got settled down and everything, it worked out real well.
Yeah, total flight time was probably, about a 0.8, something like that?
Yeah, close to an hour.
Okay,
like
close
that.
To an hour. Yep. And as you can see, yeah, they had some great fun up there, good formation. And some beautiful, beautiful airplanes. Okay, so we briefly touched on the Wildcat, the Hellcat, the Bearcat, the Tiger Cats. We've got a couple racers here. Rod, you raced for a while. Stu raced for a while successfully. I don't think you're not racing anymore, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, we've called it quits on the racing.
How about you, Stu? Are you racing anymore?
No, I finally grew up.
Okay.
We raced 18 years out there.
18 years, okay? And you guys haven't raced yet,
no.
Okay?
I race in another class, some composite sports class.
Ah, okay.
I race a Lancer, but not the Warbird side.
Winning, losing, close?
I'm beating myself every year, so that's all I go out there for.
All right, that's good.